Good morning.
Good morning.
It looks like there are two seats in here. Does anybody want to come and take these two seats? Especially those of you who are way in the back. Or maybe there's only one seat. One seat. And those of you who are way in the back might want to come on those front two seats. People complain to me that they have trouble hearing. So there are two seats up there in the front in the Founders Hall. All right. Morning. Some of us have been doing retreat here, have been sitting for a while, a day, 2 days, 5 days. 7 days? Not more than that, I don't think. Although I do tend to lose track. We do this this time every year, and the last day we honor Buddha's enlightenment. So we'll have a little ceremony, but that'll be after those of you who are here just for the morning leave. And Buddha's enlightenment supposedly occurred this time of year, although I think it's doubtful. I think it's doubtful. And of course, his sitting practice, his manual labor of sitting, is what resulted in his feeling of being separate dropping away, and his feeling of being interconnected with all beings. All beings, human, subhuman, and non-human, drop that feeling. So that's our kind of goal in our sitting, is to is to steep ourselves enough in quietness that we can have this experience of feeling part of something wonderful that's everything, and then act lovingly and compassionately in the world based on that. And even if we don't experience it at first, we do the manual labor of getting our butt on the cushion, and we develop, our muscles get sore when we do that. When we work out, our muscles get sore. But as a result of our muscles getting sore, that means that our all limited muscles are breaking down, and we're starting to develop new muscles, larger muscles. So that's I feel pretty lucky that all you guys are into doing this. Because meditation starts out being fun, and then it's not fun anymore. And then it's not fun for quite a while. Because when you work out, and you're not used to working out, and your body's not in shape, it's not fun for a while, right? Till you get to be Charles Atlas, or Jane Atlas, or something. And we always want to do that, but it's better just to take care of ourselves. Just to do the manual labor, not to worry about the result. So what I've been talking from today is what I've been talking from all week is trust, heart, mind, inscription from the 7th century in China, and I've been talking about the stanzas, and today I'm going to talk about the last few stanzas of it. Trust, heart, mind, inscription. So, heart, mind is one of the characters. Trust is another one in Chinese. I don't read Chinese. And inscription is a third one. So, by doing this practice, this sitting practice, we're inscribing in us, in our being, some trust in this deep stillness that's here, that's connected to everything, that we can feel when we just put our hands on our hearts. And when we're not thinking, we just put our hands on our hearts, and we can feel this. We can feel this. All the arteries within our body and within the animal world and the plant world coming in to the heart, and the heart just lets them pass through, and by beating, they become fresh and unpolluted. Fresh and unpolluted. But we can't do it ourselves. We can do it by doing the manual labor, by doing the sitting. So the first line that I talked about a few days ago of this prose poem is "The great way isn't difficult for those who are unattached to their preferences." The great way, the great Tao, is not difficult as long as we're unattached to our preferences. Oh, simple, huh? Simple. He doesn't say we don't have preferences. He doesn't say we should kick out preferences. If we try to kick out our preferences, we're attached to trying to kick out our preferences. He just said, notice the possibility of not being attached to your preferences. Notice the possibility of just letting the birds fly through the sky, even if they poop on the beach, just letting them fly through the sky, letting the clouds pass through. Sometimes there's a storm, sometimes there's no storm. So that's trusting heart mind, trusting heart mind, trusting that ability just to be here, just to let things pass, just to notice them, just to appreciate what is, that we have that capacity. We have that capacity. And more that could be how we are. How we are. So now I'm going to talk about the last four stanzas. So first I'm going to read them. And actually it's five stanzas. But anyway, you don't. Yeah, and I think they're in your program. Actually, they should be in your program. Being is an aspect of non-being. Non-being is no different from being. Until you understand this truth, you won't see anything clearly. One is all. All are one. When you realize this, what reason for holiness or wisdom? The mind of absolute trust is beyond all thought, all striving, is perfectly at peace, for in it there is no yesterday, no tomorrow, no today. So the first couple of stanzas, being is an aspect of non-being. Non-being is not different from being. In other words, life is an aspect of death. Death is an aspect of life. Until you understand this truth, you won't see anything clearly. So when we give up clinging to our preferences, that doesn't mean we don't pay attention to them. There they are. Sometimes we follow them, and they follow us, and we indulge them. No problem. But we're just not. We don't identify with them primarily. Primarily, we identify with this. We don't know what this is, but we can feel it beating. Even if we don't know what it is, we can feel it beating. So we give up worrying about death, about fear of death, about fear of non-being. My grandson's been worrying about death since he was 3. I thought, God, he saw a Woody Allen movie already? And my wife said, oh, that's typical for 3-year-olds. I don't remember that at 3. Now he's 6. And he said to my my daughter the other day, my daughter said, well, you're stressed out. What are you stressed out about? He said, well, number one, dying. And number two, I don't want you guys to die before me. I want to die first. 6 years old, right? 6 years old. Is he profound or what? So when we see the bird, see the fear of death flying through the sky, we can just let it be. We can just let it be. And when we do that, we actually lose our fear of death. But it's not we who lose our fear of death, just a disidentification. That's all. So then we're able, little by little, to give our dependence on God, or Buddha, or Dogen, or Suzuki, or Katagiri, or Tim, or little, or your little self, your little cranky, crying self, give up dependence on them. But they still come up. Everything comes up. Because it is. He repeats more than once in this prose poem, that nothing is excluded. Nothing is excluded. We're always excluding things and preferring things to the degree that we're fighting with ourselves and with other people. But nothing is excluded. And he says earlier on, I talked about this yesterday or the day before, with not even a trace of self-doubt, you can trust the universe completely. You can trust the universe completely. You can. If you return to just your quiet heartbeat, you can. Now, you can't necessarily trust people, but you can trust the universe. People are not all trustworthy. Even you are not trustworthy all the time, you know that. But you can trust the universe. And, you know, we don't know for how long the universe is going to continue to people, do we? It's starting to look a little shaky, a little iffy, isn't it? But we can still trust the universe, whether it peoples or not. Well, of course, we want to take care of people so that the universe continues to people. I mean, that's our instinct, right? But we don't know. Based on how things are going, climate-wise, we don't know. We don't know. But the reason we don't trust is because of fear, of course, because of fear. Because we're afraid. We're afraid. So we have a prose poem like this and lots of teaching. Lots of teaching, which helps us return to the sense that we can trust in heart mind, even if we don't know what it is, that we can feel its being and begin to trust in it. Begin to trust in it. Being is an aspect of non-being. Non-being is not different from being. Until you understand this truth, you won't see anything clearly. Until we understand this truth of not-two-ness, which includes separation, but it's not two, and two. It includes separation because the clouds are in the sky. There's a sky, and Tim's talking, and there's a microphone, and you guys are listening. But at the same time, if we're just here, it's not two. So how much manual labor do we have to put in for us to understand this truth? Until you understand this truth, you won't see anything clearly. Well, you can have little glimmers when you first start working out. Oh, yeah, I'm feeling good. But then after a while, do I have to keep working out? I'm already, doing pretty well. My muscles are toned pretty good. And I got a lot going on in my mind. There's a lot happening. Look, I'm in pretty good shape, Linda. I don't need to work out anymore for a while. I'm doing this. Well, that's what we do. We don't need to work out anymore. Or working out is kind of, whatever. But then we close off. And we close off. Then our muscles start to atrophy. Our meditation muscles is just like that. It starts to atrophy. So it's never too late to work out. Never too late to work out. To do the manual labor. And then, at some point, we start trusting in heart mind, trusting in something that we don't know or understand, but we have a sense of its availability. We trust it. And we can call it something like God or Buddha or Jesus or Suzuki Roshi. That's my guy, right? My guy. We all have our own guy, our own girl, or whatever. Oh, that's a preference, right? That's a preference. That's okay. We all have preferences. Everybody has a preference. So I do one-to-ones with people here, as you guys know. I love to do one-to-ones. And the other teachers here do one-to-ones with people. And it's a long tradition of doing one-to-ones to help people with this very issue of how are they going to start working out? How are they going to keep it going? How are they going to not get discouraged when the muscles seem to be so sore and they've got so much else to do? How are they going to do it? So that's why we do this. And this is called what we do when we meet with people one-to-one, those of us who are teachers here and have graduated from this program here that I kind of designed or somebody had designed or something, I don't know. it's called Dokusan, right? It's called Dokusan. And Dokusan is an expression that means two minds becoming one. Two minds becoming one. Well, that's interesting. Two minds becoming one. So we return to stillness and we realize we're not separate. But if we try to become one, we miss it because this clouds are already in the sky. We don't have to try to get rid of them or say that the sky is real and the clouds are not. The clouds are in the sky. They're one, but they're two. They're two. Without the clouds, would we enjoy the sky? So they're two. So two minds become one. Well, that's okay, but already the clouds are in the sky. Already the sky is enveloping the clouds. So when we have these one-to-one meetings, there's no need to prepare. No need for the person who's coming in to prepare. No need for the teacher to prepare because the clouds are in the sky. The sky is enveloping the clouds. So we just show up. Just show up. Heart mind. Heart mind's always beating. Is it one or is it 65 or 65,000 heart minds? We don't know. In a way, it is one. It is one. But in a way, it's 65,000. And the arteries are going everywhere, taking away that polluted blood and then bringing in fresh blood. Wow, we don't have to do anything except the manual labor. Anyadatta was a beautiful maiden who enjoyed nothing more than gazing at herself in the mirror each morning. One day, when she looked into her mirror, she found no head reflected there. The shock was so great that she became frantic, rushing around, demanding to know who had taken her head. Though everyone told her, "Don't be silly, your head's on your shoulders, where it's always been," she refused to believe it and continued her frenzied search. Your heart mind's already here. You don't need another heart. It's doing a pretty good job. Well, maybe you had to have some surgery, but still, that's okay. Sometimes we need to have some surgery on our heart. That's okay. A big intervention we need in our life. We need to make a radical change because the arteries are clogged. So we need a radical change. Well, we can make a radical change, and then these days, people seem to be able to do that just fine. Just fine. At length, her friends, believing her mad, dragged her home and tied her to a pillar to prevent her harming herself. My goodness. Slowly, her friends persuaded her that she had always had her head, and gradually she came to half believe it. So when you have trust in heart mind a little bit, that's half believing it. You half believe, oh, I half believe what Tim's saying, but maybe it just applies to him, not to me. I've been working out all week and my muscles are in worse shape than when I started. Trust in heart mind eventually is the end stops, the end evaporates. It's heart mind trusting, heart mind trusting. Slowly, her friends persuaded her that she had always had her head, and gradually she came to half believe it. You know, we half believe in God, we half believe in Buddha, we half believe in nothingness. But what if we totally believe in those? And if we totally believe in them, we let them go. We don't need to talk about them anymore. We don't need to convert anybody to anything, do we? Because of heart, mind, speaking. God doesn't want to convert somebody to something, anything. Doesn't matter what it is, political, social, religious, it's still the end. We haven't just opened up to appreciating this and feeling compassion toward the parts of the artery that are clogged, so that we can just be there for them. Her subconscious mind began to accept the fact that perhaps she was deluded in thinking she had lost her head. So the fact that you're here means that you, in some part of your mind, you see, oh, I don't need all this stuff. This is extra stuff. I'm going to come here and sit and listen to the Dharma for a few minutes because this stuff is superfluous. This extra head is superfluous. You wouldn't be here. Well, you might be here. Somebody, a friend might have told you to come. Well, if you came for a friend, that's fine. Or you might have come just out of curiosity. And that's fine, too. You never know what will happen. You never know. Some people just come to spiritual practice out of curiosity and they get really hooked. Suddenly, one of her friends gave her a terrific clout on the head. Seems like in Buddhism they're always clouting each other on the head, aren't they? Cutting their cheeks or hitting them on the shoulders. What's the deal? I thought we were nonviolent. I thought this was ahimsa. Suddenly one of her friends gave her a terrific clout on the head, upon which in pain and shock she yelled, "Ow! That's your head. There it is," her friend exclaimed. And immediately Anyadatta saw that she had deluded herself into thinking she had lost her head, when in fact she always had it. When this happened to Anyadatta, she was so elated that she rushed around exclaiming, "Oh, I've got it! I have my head after all! I'm so happy!" So the next stanza. One is all, all are one. When you realize this, what reason for holiness or wisdom? One is all are one. When you realize this, what reason for holiness or wisdom? Well, according to the story, the Jews were waiting and waiting for the Messiah. And Jesus said, "Who are you waiting for? I'm here. Heart, mind is here. Heart, mind is here." Now, people thought it was him. Well, maybe it was him. I don't know. But heart mind is here. There's no need to wait. Just be with it. It's here. Regardless of how much of a storm cloud you feel you're in the sky. Feel it. Feel it. Open up to it. So this being that we're waiting for, this God or who's here, this no-thingness who's here, if you like, Stephen Batchelor, this Kali, I'm not talking about Kali lately, whatever term you want to use, Buddha, arose by any other name would smell the same. Arose by any other name would smell the same. Right? Right? And look at all of the problems we create, because instead of smelling the rose, we're arguing about whether it's a rose or a this or a that. Look at all the wars that are going on right now and have been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years because of this. Instead of just smelling, just opening up to heart mind. Wow. Wow. No wonder the universe is not sure if it wants to continue to people. I checked in with it and it said, "Well, I'm kind of not sure about this. I haven't made up my mind. I'm agnostic about these people. I'm waiting to see." You can't blame for the universe for being agnostic about us, can you? What if some things are really cool about us? Really cool. And yet. Van Gogh was asked which of his paintings was the best. The one I am working on right now. The one I am working on right now. If you have this attitude, you'll be safe in your life. You'll be safe wherever you are. Of course, he didn't have a practice. He had this attitude in his art, but not in his daily life. So he suffered greatly, greatly. Many artists have known how to do this in their art, but not in their daily lives. In the West, in the East, there are lots of artists and poets in the East, but they're not agonizing like Van Gogh and Janis Joplin and all these people. It's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting. I mean, they may be now in the 21st century, but they weren't historically. They probably are now. Now that they're doing our thing, kind of. Everybody is doing our thing, the American thing. Which is not all bad. There's something wonderful about entrepreneurial spirit. Yeah, something wonderful. And yet, one is all is one. What reason for holiness or wisdom? So as you're listening to me, Especially since I go on and on this morning, I'm not going on and on, I promise. But since I go on and on, you might think, God, or no God, enough of this. Enough of this, let's get out and do something. Let's get out and do something. Enough of this. So if I personalize this, if I personalize this, I'm attaching to my preference. My preference is you pay attention. You show up, you don't fall asleep. But as soon as I start personalizing it, I'm clogging my arteries, my heart rhyme arteries. And I just have to come back to my bare awareness that I have good arteries, that I can just let them be, that they know how to take, they don't have to be attached to that preference that clogs my arteries. Right? Right? And so Meister Eckhart calls this, as I've said, covering up. He says it this. He calls it the soul. What I call the heart mind, he calls the soul. A rose by any other name would smell the same, right? He says it's covering up the soul with 40 skins or hides as thick and hard as an ox's or bear's. So we have our thinking skins. And I've been talking the last few talks about mind mice. They develop mind mice. Mice in our mind. Their residue, their pellets develop a hard skin so that we're agitated by those mind mice. We're agitated. But all you have to do is notice those mice and live trap them and take them to the park. If we kill those mice, they're going to smell everything up. And anyway, they're part of us. They're part of who we are. Why do we have to kill them? We can take them to the park. Are we too lazy to take them to the park? Give me a break. I don't think so. We're not that lazy, are we? We want to support all beings. And in this case, they're not doing any harm. They just want to get in for some warmth in this somewhat inclement weather. They didn't know what Minnesota was going to be like. They didn't sign up to be in Minnesota, but they got it. They got it. Mind mice want to hang out in here, where it's warm, where they get lots of cheese and crackers and just sometimes crumbs. Crumbs are good enough. I need something to sustain myself, to sustain my mind mice. Any crumb, and I'll get my little catch of crumbs. It's getting cold. I got to get my catch of crumbs in my head, right, in my psyche. Got a plan. Of course, we have to eat, but gee, do we have to congeal everything into our little world? That everything else is secondary. And our little world is fine. We need to take care of it. But it ain't the whole thing. Just not. So we have our thinking skin. And then we have our cultural thinking. That's our inside us. Thinking skin, I should say around us. But then we have our cultural thinking skin too. You know, our ideals, our principles. Oh, they're wonderful. Democracy, freedom. Oh, that's wonderful, isn't it? So like what Buddha did. Buddha was quite egalitarian. He had a republican. Well, I can't talk about this now because it's 30 minutes after. But anyway, Buddha was good. Buddha was good. As you are good, as we all are good, because the heart mind is beating. That's right. That's right. No worry. The heart mind is beating. So, those Iraqis, what was this, 2002? They need some democracy. Let's give those guys some democracy as a way. With a little democracy, you know, they'll be shaped up. Let's shape those, because we know how to do this. Look at us. Give them a little democracy. First, eliminate Saddam and then give them democracy. Well, what happened? What's happening now? What's happening now? Some not so cool, right? Not so cool. Thinking skin. We get a skin about this way of being, or that way of being, or the other way of being. And it hardens us, so we just don't open up to this wonderful stillness here in the beating of the heart. Our feeling skin, over grieving and inevitable sorrow, over clinging to joys, indulging in whatever anger comes up, instead of just tasting the anger, letting it pass through us, digesting it, letting it go. When I say tasting it, I don't mean thinking about it. I don't mean that. I mean just letting it be. It's part of, nothing is excluded. It's part of, it's a cloud in the sky. Let's just let it be. Notice it. Let it be. No, experience it physiologically. Experience it in your body rather than just in your head. The third stanza. The mind of absolute trust is beyond all thought. All striving is perfectly at peace. So to develop the muscle so that we can just feel this way, most of the time, this absolute trust, this peacefulness, we sit in meditation. And the archetypal sitter is Bodhidharma. Bodhidharma, who sat facing a wall for how long?
7 years.
7 years, 9 years, you know, give or take a year, right? So he's our archetypal hero. He's our archetypal hero. And, you know, when you see him, he's not a kind of guy you'd like to hang out with if you've seen his picture. His piercing eyes. Who'd want to go sit with him, basically? But anyway, the way they're just, those pictures, those depictions are pointing out how much determination it takes to do this manual labor. How much determination. And of course, when you see his eyes, they're very clear. They're very clear. So we become very clear. That's what it says here. We return to perfect peacefulness, perfect clarity, even if only for a moment. But if we return for a moment, we can return to it for another moment. And then another moment. And what are our moments? Anyway, what are they? The mind of absolute trust is beyond all thought. All striving is perfectly at peace. So the story, which I've told many times, is, and I'm telling a very short version today, is the emperor went to see Bodhidharma after developing all these meditation centers, because Bodhidharma is the man, and he said he wants acknowledgement, he wants support, and he says to Bodhidharma, "What's the significance of all this sitting?" But he doesn't say it that way. He says, "What's the significance of all I've done?" And Bodhidharma says, "No significance or no merit." So if we do things primarily for gain and loss, if we work out primarily to get our muscles in shape, we're always focusing on how well we're doing, and we're never at peace. So the difference between what we do and what most people do at the gym is that they're always measuring, how am I doing, how am I doing? So they're never at peace. They develop more and more muscles, and they say, oh, that's not enough. So they're never at peace, whereas we just do it. Our peace comes from doing it. Dogen calls this luminosity. Luminosity. We just do it. We just give ourselves to it. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what it is. And that's how we build resilience. So then the emperor says to Bodhidharma, well, what's the first principle of your holy teaching? And Bodhidharma says, a vast emptiness. And I'm using the Taoist interpretation of emptiness, a vast spaciousness with nothing holy about it. A vast spaciousness with nothing holy about it. So that's an opportunity that we have in our meditation to manifest. Nothing is excluded. all the clouds in the sky, we just let them pass through. So we don't attach to a holy cloud or a holy sky or a holy God or a holy Tim or a holy anybody. We don't attach to that because we're whole. The sky, the earth, us, we're all here. We're whole. So why do we need something holy? Because we feel bereft. We feel not okay. So we'll make this holy. But the problem is somebody else wants to make something else holy. Or they think the way we made this holy is not the right way. So then we have all of this problems in human culture, in human beings' way of reacting, interacting. So all we do, Heart Mind prose poem tells us, all we do is notice that nothing is separate and nothing in the world is excluded. Very simple. So we sit down and breathe. We're still to this vast emptiness, vast stillness, with nothing specific, nothing holy about it. And that, because we're whole. We're whole. So then the emperor says, to Bodhidharma, and we know that the emperor never would have visited Bodhidharma in a cave. There's a lot of recent scholarship on that, and emperors don't go visit people in caves. People come to emperors. But anyway, this is a story, right? And if he had visited a cave, he would have had to have a huge retinue, and all the retinue would have had to check out the cave first before they let the emperor come in, you know, to see if it was clean, you know, see if Bodhidharma was going to be nice to him, you know. But we know that didn't happen. But anyway, mythology is cool, don't you think? It helps us. So the third question then is, the emperor is what? By this time, the emperor is just very puzzled. He just, what is going on here? You know, I came all the way across northern China. I left my retinue behind. And this guy, he says there's no significance to what I've done after I did all this. And then he says his teaching is a vast spaciousness with nothing holy. I'm in the wrong cave. This is a wrong cave. I got wrong directions. So he says to Bodhidharma, then who are you? Then who are you? And Bodhidharma says, I don't know. I don't know. This is a different kind of I don't know than usual I don't know. The usual I don't know is troubled. It's trying to figure things out. It's trying to know how to get along in the world. Like my wonderful Unitarian minister when I was a boy. He was wonderful. He helped me in my Zen. But his I don't know is painful, I don't know. But this I don't know is the sky with all the clouds in it. That's what it is. I don't know. Wow. Luminosity, I don't know. Brain pouring. Sun shining, I don't know. 30 below, 30 above, I don't know. 100 degrees, wow, I don't know. Are we going to continue to people if it's 100 degrees in April? I don't know. But then we should do something because we're still responsible as people. Because when that I don't know doesn't kick out the need to come back and take care of this so that people can feel connected. So that if we feel connected to them, we need to do something. We need to act. Not just sit, but act. But the more we sit, the more we can act in an undivided way. In an undivided way. So, here's the Zen master. Buds open in spring without straining. Leaves fall in autumn without reluctance. Snow blankets everything with great silence. The seasons come and go. Years and centuries pass. The great way is not difficult as long as we don't attach to our preferences. It's not difficult. He doesn't say it's not easy. He doesn't say it's easy. He just says it's not difficult. Because life is hard. Life is hard. But it's not difficult when we just come back to this situation, this relationship, this concern, and take care of it with our kind mind, with our open heart, paying attention, paying attention. And of course, this situation includes many other situations. Many, many other. But we have to start here and then spread out. If we start here, we'll be able to spread out in a way that's helpful. That's helpful. So the last stanza. For in it, there is no yesterday, no tomorrow, no today. For in it, in heart, mind, in God, in nothingness, in the middle of a storm cloud, right in the middle of the sky, there's no yesterday, no tomorrow, no today. So we're not clinging to some idea of time. All time is included. Wow, we always have plenty of time. We always have plenty of time. Don't need to rush. Don't need to rush. And if we need to rush, then we can do it without worrying. We just go fast and we don't do extra stuff. You can do that. You can do that. So that's basically what I want to say for this morning. But since I have a little time, I will see if anybody has any questions or comments, which I don't do during retreat except on the last day. So if anybody has any questions or comments, and so we have a little time. Yeah, Raymond.
Mm-hmm. Could you speak to the difference of totally believe versus blindly believe?
Totally believe versus blindly believe. Well, I'm a little. I wouldn't use the word believe. I use the word trust rather than believe.
Trust.
So totally trust versus blindfully believe. Well, when we blindfully believe, we're caught by our belief. It's a blinder. The belief is a blinder. My belief that I'm the best guiding teacher in the Twin Cities, maybe the United States, maybe the world, maybe the universe. if I got I'm blinded to that. If I had that belief, blinded. Because I don't, I think I just get attached to my idea of who I should be or who I am. It's being. It's noticing heart mind. So that's belief. But trust, which comes from just opening up, it softens belief. It softens the need to believe. Beliefs are still there, but they're fluid. They're fluid. They pass like the clouds pass. Sometimes the cloud's there for a long time. And, wow, it's a beautiful cumulus cloud. I've never seen a cumulus cloud like that. But then it passes. So we have trust. Trust. And it's not Tim's trust. It's trust beyond Tim. Although Tim has to be still for that trust to be there. If Tim's all busy, that trust's not there. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Sure. Who else? What else? Yeah.
Here's an interesting thing. Look at somebody else in the room and notice that they have feet and they have knees, legs, and hips, stomach, chest, shoulders, heads.
Yeah.
Now look at yourself.
Yeah.
You have feet,
yeah,
legs, hips,
yeah,
stomach, chest,
yeah. Yeah.
No head.
Ah, hey. Pretty good. Pretty good. Oh, this guy. This guy. Thank you. Oh, profound one. Thank you. No, thank you, really. Somebody back there had their hand up? No. Anybody else have anything? Okay, anything? Going, gone. Well, thank you very much. And we're going to continue in our retreat here. And so we're asking you to silently and as gracefully as possible vacate the premises. But why not? practice vacating these premises. If you learn how to vacate these premises, then you're okay, even if your premises are really crowded. Because that's your practice. That's your practice, to learn how to vacate these premises.
Thank you all for joining us. And as I make a few announcements, I will pass around the Dana bowl. Dana means generosity. And it is through our generosity that we share and open up the jewels of the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha to all. If you're interested in any of the following events, please look at the information bottom on the front bulletin board and your paper bulletin. The Dharma Family Sundays, coordinated by Susan Nelson, on the second Sunday of each month. Sitting with Sutras, contemplative afternoons with Rosemary Taylor on Saturday, December 12th. A monthly discussion group discussing the book The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. A class on sin, ritual, and liturgy.